Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Do you find yourself bored at work while eating your lunch?
Do you watch the clock waiting for work to be over?
As you're sitting in meetings, do you find your boss's voice sounding like a howling banshee?
Then don't wait another minute. Tune into the Paranormal Peeps podcast.
We are ready to entertain you.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Mystery. Frequency.
And thank you all for tuning in. Today we have back-to-back episodes of Steve Gardner Mysteries, a series of adventure mysteries created by Edward Boyd. If you enjoy this episode, please check out the archives for more thrilling mysteries. Keep those questions coming in for our one-year anniversary show. You can send them through my email, mysteryfrequencypodcast@gmail.com, Twitter at mysteryfreak, F-R-E-Q, Instagram, mysteryfrequency, or in the comments below on Spotify. And also don't forget to check out the polls to offer feedback about the show. And as always, please follow, review, and rate the podcast wherever you can. Check out the descriptions below for links to everything associated with the show. And with that, please enjoy Steve Gardner Mysteries, Volume 1.
We present Teddy Johnson as Steve Gardner in The Candle of Darkness, a serial thriller in six parts by Edward Boyd. The Candle of Darkness, Part 1.
Above all, let's play fair. Let's play fair above all. Honesty is the best policy, the man said, adding in a back-of-the-dictionary burst of Latin, let justice be done though the heavens fall. Call me Steve Gardner, and you'll get an answer. But there were things that happened long before I came along. And now, so we can start from scratch, let's happen them again. There was the poem.
You who are alive, who survive, whom the mathematics of luck wakes 10-finger to counter Private Dawn's blessing, what can you know of the clay and the candle of darkness and the worm's molecular kiss?
Then there was that first midnight.
Send it down, David, send it down. Oh, ah, it's yourself, is it? You turned the heart of me crossways jumping out of the dark like that. Would you listen to it grumbling and rumbling up there? If I had a son of mine on the sea this night, it's money I'd be spending on candles for a special intention. But I ain't neither chick nor child, and as lucky they are the ones I haven't got. What are you laughing at? What? Mother of heaven, what are you after doing? Get away from me with that knife, you hear? Get away! Get away!
Ah! That was the first one. Rose Ann McGurn. Charwoman, age 57, and prematurely. Sat at his child, worked hard for a living. Married, widowed, cheerful, childless, murdered. No relatives, no friends, no flowers by request. The second one died in a public park, named after a prosperous pawnbroker by a grateful community.
But what was this punch-up about?
You.
Who won me?
Oh, look, pack it in, will you?
Look, the fight was about me. I've a right to know. Who was defending my honour, if you'll pardon the expression?
Oh, shut up.
Charming. I've had you, Big Shot.
Look, Stella.
You were shouting the odds, weren't you, about me being your bird, and worse. And Alex Anders told you to belt up, and you tried to hit him, and he knocked you down.
Look,
Then you tried to put the head on him, and he knocked you down again. End of story.
I'd had a drink.
Great. That makes it all right, then. You'd had a drink. Great.
Don't worry. If I've had it, so has he.
Oh, that'll be the day. I can hardly... Oh,
what's wrong?
I fell over something. I think... It's a man...
It's Alex Saunders.
Was that why you brought me here? Was it? Did you bring me here to see him?
Stella,
You said he'd had it, didn't you? No, don't touch me. Don't touch me. Let me go. Let me go. Let me go. Let me go. Let me go.
Stella! Stella, come back. Stella, don't leave me here with this.
Alex Saunders. Aged 18, apprentice engineer, waiting to join his parents in Toronto when his time was out. Which it was, now. Canadian papers, please copy. The third was a derelict called Jingling Geordie, who roamed about the district with the planet's predictability. Someone met him in a shop doorway, and now he would roam no more, for death is a notoriously fixed abode. Well, that's how the score stood that night when I got off the train in that little seaside town and spoke to the man who was sweeping confetti off the platform with a misogynistic broom. You want this?
Eh?
You want this?
What is it?
It's a railway ticket.
Oh, mate, I'll take it.
Thank you. Where can I get a taxi?
A taxi?
Well, who runs the local garage?
Peter Cherry.
Does he have a phone number?
Yes.
I'll bet you it's unlisted.
Huh?
Do you know his telephone number?
Oh, yes.
Care to share it?
1389.
Thank you. Where's the phone?
Up there past the gents.
Well, there's planning for you. Thanks again.
The phone's out of order.
Is the one in the office?
Office is locked.
You couldn't open it, perhaps.
Oh, no.
I'm looking for a bloke called Jimmy Morton.
Town's filled with Mortons.
It would be. Well, thanks for your help. I'll ask in the town.
Glad to have been of assistance.
The town was built like an intelligence test. It was lit by weird green light. And that night, the lamplighter had had intermittent bouts of amnesia. Soon I was hopelessly lost. Then someone came billowing down on me like a black ship in full sail. She stumbled as she passed me, and I caught her by the arm. Steady on, old dear. Are you all right?
Help! 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 The kind man!
The kind man? What are you talking about?
He's going to kill me!
I was only trying to help you, miss.
He tried to kill me!
Whatever is all this?
There
he is, Mick. Grab hold of him.
Put you this thing, boy.
Take your hands off. Take your hands off.
Hold on to him, Mick.
All right. You asked for it, bud.
Lynch him. Lynch him.
You clear the way there. Clear the way there.
Will you... Let me go!
Lynch him!
I'll take my back to you, Puggy Wilson. Well, break it up there now. Break it up. Now, I'm not going to tell you again.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Right then. What's this all about?
He's going to kill me. He was.
I don't know what she's talking about.
He's the kind man.
One at a time now. One at a time.
Oh, that's the way he kills them. One at a time.
What the hell is all this kind man jazz?
English.
Yes, and it's high time you told these natives about the Union of the Crowns.
Start moving. Go on, move along. If you've homes, go to them. If you haven't, go to somebody else's.
He's the kind man, I tell you. He's the kind man.
We'll sort it all out when we get to the station. Now, will you move along when I tell you? Or I'll have to run you in.
The police station was all polish and no spit. The sergeant there had the look of a fisherman who had got out of his bunk one morning and put on the wrong clothes and had just decided to stay with them. He looked at me as though I was bad visibility.
The lady says you grabbed her.
I stopped her falling on her face. Now I've seen her in the light, it wasn't worth the effort.
She saw the gleam of metal.
My wristwatch.
Perhaps.
Look, would you care to search me?
No, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Do me one small favor.
We don't do favors.
Break the rule just this once. Tell me, what is this all about?
The lady goes on to say that
the lady is out of a tiny bijou mind.
Would you agree with that, Mackenzie?
No, Sergeant. She's always seemed very normal to me, Miss Wiley.
Miss Wiley?
You know her.
I know a million Miss Wileys. Elderly spinsters with fantasies of rape.
Kind of ways that to talk.
Be quiet, Mackenzie.
But he said...
I said quiet, Mackenzie.
Sorry, Sergeant.
How long have you been in this district, Mr...
Gardner, Steve Gardner. And I've been in this nightmare town one whole long, meaningless hour.
We can check, you know.
Look, the hell with this. What am I doing here?
Assisting the police.
You've just lost an assistant.
You'd better find Inspector Gordon, Mackenzie.
Inspector Gordon was a tall man with the lean, loping look of a deerhound. His face was the color of insomnia, and there was a sadness about him, as though he'd seen it all and still didn't believe it. He sat and looked at me for a long, long time. It won't work, Inspector.
What won't work?
The old silence treatment.
Oh, is that what I was using?
I've had it worked on me by professionals.
Oh, I'm a professional myself.
Not in the same class as the professional I'm talking about.
Oh, and who were they?
Chinese, brainwashing experts.
And when and where did you encounter them?
In North Korea, when I was a teenager.
Korea?
I was a prisoner for 2 years.
Did you collaborate?
No.
The sergeant tells me you're still not collaborating.
I don't know what I'm supposed to collaborate about.
You're from London, aren't you, Mr. Gardner?
Is that a crime up here?
No. Not exactly, no. I understand you arrived on the last train.
Mackenzie's checked, has he?
He has indeed. What do you do for a living?
I wheel and deal.
Meaning?
Somebody's got something you want. You've got something they want. I bring you together, you do a deal, and I get a cut.
You must know a lot of people.
I do.
Who do you know in this town?
Jimmy Morton.
You've come from London to wheel and deal with him.
I hope so.
Can you remember where you were on the 28th of November?
Brussels.
That came a bit pat, didn't it?
I've only been in Brussels once, and only for one day. It's my business to remember details. Look, I have three people who will vouch for it.
All right, I believe you.
Who is the kind man?
Homicidal maniac.
Charming.
He's killed three people. First an old Irish woman, then a boy of 18, and last a middle-aged tramp. Each time the knife. Each time... messy.
I see no kindness there.
We got to the tramp just before he died. He muttered something about a kind man.
Ready-made for the press.
Oh, they loved it. The kind man fits snug in their cloud cuckoo land, where every killer is a prince of darkness and every dead drab is Cleopatra.
Can I go now?
There's a cozy newspaper theory about the kind, Mark.
There's a cozy newspaper theory about everything.
It's based on the fact that the victims so far have all been alone. Mistress McGarren had no relatives. The tramp was alone in the world. And the boy's folks were in Canada, and he lived in Diggs. Alone.
Mercy killing gone crazy.
More or less.
I'll stay indoors at full moon.
In this town, Gardner, every night is full moon.
The sergeant directed me to the Morton household, and I set off through the frightened streets. Gordon was right. The town creaked with terror. It fluttered in a curtain's folds, and the quick, white look of a face. The air was dark and stifled, as though it too had its head under the bedclothes. Ghosts of headlines whispered from orphan newspapers, swirling in darkened alleys.
The kind man. The kind man. The kind man.
I took the road to the right, past the graveyard. An angel hung high above the wall in marble flight and holding out a laurel crown. He looked like he'd been caught making off with a doughnut. And then I heard footsteps, and my shoulder blades went taut.
Mister.
You want something?
The price you bid, Mr. Ratso, just the price you bid.
Friend. Have you no friends, friend?
Huh? Oh, I have got friends. Hundreds.
Then go to them, friend.
I'll do that.
Man, the kind man really does run this town. The Morton's house stood back in from the road. The gate was neither open nor shut, just stuck. You could have fought your way through the lawn in 3 days, with a compass and a good guide. Call me fanciful, but the garden seemed only to grow black flowers. I walked up the path to the house. It had never been beautiful, never. And beautiful was the last thing it was now. I rang the bell. It tolled like the bell in that submerged cathedral. And suddenly, for a long time, nothing happened.
What do you want at this time of night?
Does Jimmy Morton live here?
Who wants to know?
I do.
And who are you?
I'm from the Bureau of Better Manners. And don't tell me you've already got some.
Who is it, Delia?
Oh, it's some clever Englishman.
I regard you highly, too.
What does he want?
He's looking for Jimmy.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Show him into the drawing room.
You do know who he is.
Show him into the drawing room.
Well, that's your funeral. Wipe your feet, you.
The drawing room consisted mostly of books. They lay around like slates blown from a roof. Everything was filthy, and there were cobwebs on the cobwebs. The ashes in the fireplace were heaped and damp. The furniture was by Messrs. Wet Rot and Woodworm. All things considered, he wondered how Delia justified her existence. But the room had one striking feature, a portrait above the mantelpiece. The portrait of an astonishingly beautiful woman. Then the door opened, and there entered a faded little footnote of a man.
My name is Wilfred Morton. I'm Jimmy's father.
Gardner, Steve Gardner.
Have we met before?
No.
I'm afraid Jimmy's out at the moment.
But he will be back.
Oh, yes. That is, I suppose so.
It's very important that I see him.
Oh?
Do you mind if I wait?
No. doesn't matter.
If it's inconvenient, I'll go away and come back again later.
No, you're perfectly welcome to wait. You're from London.
That's right.
You're not a policeman, by any chance?
Not by any chance. No.
You must excuse that silly question. You see, Jimmy's such a complete enigma to me.
It's a familiar pattern.
Never know what he's thinking of, what he's been doing. Never have known.
You probably baffle him just as much.
Yes? Yes. I suppose so. He doesn't owe you money, does he?
Not a penny.
I'm not doing very well, am I?
Not very.
You must make allowances for me.
Consider them made.
When you see practically no one for years and years, social sense tends to become fossilized. May I offer you a cup of coffee?
I'd like that.
Yes. Perhaps you'd be good enough to pull that bell rope beside you.
Certainly. Oh! I'm sorry, it just seemed to come apart.
Rotted. Whole house is rotten. I'll call Delia. Delia. Delia.
What is it now?
Make some coffee, please.
Make it yourself. I'm going to bed.
Servants. No problem.
I'll make the coffee if you like.
That's very good of you.
The kitchen?
Yes, the kitchen. It's at the end of the passage. On the left.
I could have found that kitchen blindfold. It stank. As I went to switch the light on, something ruby-eyed glared at me and scuttled away. The light produced a flurry of disturbed beetles. There were about 10 years' dishes sprawled in the sink. And not too far away, two loaves were growing something that would probably cure penicillin. Heroically, I brewed the coffee and took it back to the drawing room.
Excellent coffee.
My one art form. Do you mind if I ask you something?
Not at all.
It's about that portrait over the mantelpiece.
Yes.
It's a lovely thing.
It's a portrait of my wife.
A very beautiful woman.
She died giving birth to Jimmy. I'm glad you didn't say I'm sorry or something meaningless like that. Most people do.
I never know what to say, so I say nothing.
A life for a life, some fool said. Well, I didn't think much of that sort of bargain. Still don't.
Your coffee's getting cold.
The top of the house was peculiarly hers. After she died, I locked it up. I left it exactly as it was, like that ever since. Clean it myself. The piano is always kept tuned.
For heaven's sake, why?
This is a house of ghosts. That's her ghost. Always. And I'm a ghost. Jimmy's become one too. The only real person in the house has been Delia.
I reckon.
When I brought her here from the orphanage, she was stupid and clumsy, but she was real.
She still is.
No. Some things happened to her, and she isn't real anymore either.
What this house needs is all its windows broken, preferably with Delia's head.
You're a very frank person.
Not always. I can be as devious as the next one.
I hope you haven't come here to be devious.
I don't have to be.
I'm glad to hear it.
Mind you, it's a devious little town you've got here. I was asked tonight where I was on the 28th of November.
An odd question.
And why would anyone ask it?
Why, indeed.
Could that be the date when your local maniac killed his last victim? Mr. Morton? Mr. Morton, are you all right?
Yes, I'm all right. I think that's Jimmy now. I'll leave you together. Jimmy?
Yes, Father?
You have a visitor.
A visitor?
In the drawing room.
Thank you.
Good night, Jimmy.
Good night, Father.
He had hardly changed. The famous charm was still undimmed, and his face still kept that incredible youthfulness, but with a difference. There's something like a gray dust over both face and charm, as though neither had been used for a long time.
Steve Gardner.
Hello, Jimmy.
Great to see you. Hey, what's happened to your face?
Fair wear and tear. Your father never even noticed it.
I never notices anything. Where have you sprung from?
London.
And how is London these days?
Swinging, or so I keep reading.
Great. Great to see you.
Bongo Warren sends his love.
No, you're still in touch?
Occasionally.
What's he doing?
Public relations. What else?
Does he still have that fantastic moustache?
He has, and he's still talking about Korea.
Oh, yeah. Korea. How did Bongo know you'd be seeing me?
I told him I was coming here. That's right, Jimmy. I'm an ambassador. They want you back.
It's not on.
Why not?
I haven't got it anymore.
Oh, come on, Jimmy. You don't just lose talent through a hole in your pocket.
You don't understand.
It's a big deal, Jimmy.
No, but I couldn't.
At least let's talk about it.
All right, Steve. We'll talk about it. But not now. Not tonight. In the morning, maybe.
As long as we talk.
You must stay with us tonight.
Well, I was thinking of...
No, I won't hear of anything else. You can have my room. I'll sleep in the spare one. I insist. I absolutely insist.
All right. All right, Jimmy, whatever you say. We talked for a while about this and that and everything except the thing I'd come to talk about. And finally, we said goodnight and sought our virtuous couches. I woke up with my spine crawling. I could hear a voice, and it was right in my ear.
Hello, Jimmy. I'm here again, Jimmy. Have you missed me, Jimmy? I've got another one for you tonight. Listen. You who are alive, who survive, whom the mathematics of luck wakes 10-finger to counter Private Dawn's blessing. What can you know of the clay and the candle of darkness and the worm's molecular kiss? I haven't finished it, Jimmy. I'm still working on it. But don't worry. As soon as it's finished, I'll be back again. I'll be back.
What is this? What the hell is going on here?
Steve!
Is this your idea of a joke, Jimmy?
You've had it, Steve. Say you've had it.
I heard it, all right.
You're not just saying that, Steve. You wouldn't do that, would you?
Pull yourself together.
I'm glad you had it. Glad you had it.
Jimmy, listen to me. Just a minute. Who's that outside there? Who is it?
It's me. Delia.
What are you doing wandering around?
None of your business.
I don't dig you and I don't dig your tone. And if it doesn't improve, I'm liable to tear it right out by the roots.
I came down because I thought I heard a noise.
Well, you didn't, so beat it.
Yes, sir.
All right, Jimmy, now, what about this voice?
It was him again.
Who?
Francis. Francis Lennox.
You mean you recognized the voice?
Yes.
Then why don't you go and punch him in the mouth?
Because Francis Lennox has been dead for years.
Was the first part of The Candle of Darkness, a serial thriller by Edward Boyd. The production was by Eddie Fraser.
In part one of The Candle of Darkness, Steve Gardner was played by Teddy Johnson, Mrs. McGann by Helen Norman, Stella, Isabel Gardner, Albert, Paul Young, Railway Porter, Eric Whiteman, Miss Wiley, Marjorie D.L., P.C. McKenzie, John Young, Police Sergeant Calman Glass, Detective Inspector Gordon, Moultrie R. Kelsall, Tramp, Douglas Murchie, Delia Dewar, Effie Morrison, Wilfred Morton, Leonard Maguire, and Jimmy Morton by Jimmy Logan.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples, too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
We present Teddy Johnson as Steve Gardner in The Candle of Darkness, a serial thriller in six parts by Edward Boyd. The Candle of Darkness, Part 2.
I swear to you, or my name isn't Steve Gardner, there's nothing so quiet as a little seaside town in winter. When you have a homicidal maniac loose, when you're almost lynched just for being out after dark, and the man you've come up from London to see is behaving very strangely, and the police are hostile, when you wake up at night in a crumbling household with a voice repeating a poem in your ear.
All right, Jimmy, what about this voice?
It was him again.
Who?
Francis. Francis Lennox.
You mean you recognize the voice?
Yes.
Then why don't you go and punch him in the mouth?
Because Francis Lennox has been dead for years.
Sit down, Jimmy. How long has this been going on?
The voice?
That'll do to start with.
4 years.
Every night?
I wish it was.
Why do you say that?
If it was every night, I could get used to it. It's not knowing when. That's the killer.
You couldn't be mistaken. I mean, one whisper's pretty well like another.
Francis Lennox and I were born within 2 years of each other. We lived practically next door. We went to the same school. One time we had the same kind of crush on the same girl. We were in Korea together. We were in the same prison camp.
Anything happened there?
Nothing. It was just a prison camp.
You're certain he's dead?
If he wasn't, we buried him alive.
You've got to get out of here, Jimmy.
I can't.
You must.
Must?
You'll go spare if you don't.
Oh, don't con me, Steve. You're not really worried about me. You've been told to bring me back, and you'll use any means on hand to do that. You're at it.
All right. So I have an axe to grind. What of it? It's a pretty clean axe. It's going to hurt nobody. It's going to take you out of this Dracula's den and put you where the lights are brighter. It's going to fill your pockets with lovely, melodious money. It's going to give a lot of people a lot of work and others a lot of fun.
Shut up, Steve.
Look, the book's written, it's only great. The music and lyrics are Rodgers and Hammerstein class. There's a cast that could fill the theatre if the roof was taken off and the seats turned backwards. And there's a part that's tailored just for you.
No!
The public made you, Jimmy. Don't you feel any responsibility to them?
I have a bigger responsibility here.
Your father?
Yes.
But he's a big boy now. He can probably tie his own shoelaces.
I can't leave him alone.
Are you afraid the kind man will get him?
I'm afraid of a lot of things, but the last thing I'm afraid of is that the kind man will get my father.
Do you know what you're saying?
Oh, don't come on at me, Steve. Why do you have to come here anyway? Why couldn't you leave me alone? I was making it, getting used to it, and then you... Sure, I want to come back. I never wanted to be away. Do you think it's easy when you've been up there just to jack it all in and walk on by? Well, I'm here to tell you...
What are you here to tell me?
The London bit is out. You yourself, Steve, you're welcome to stay as long as you like, but no more London talk, okay?
It's not, but I'll accept it.
Fine. And now I'm going back to bed. It's been quite a night. Quite a night.
The great thing about daylight is that it at least seems to make sense. It makes sinister houses seem merely shabby. It chases away bats and owls and things with gleaming eyes. It creates colors all over again. It has a quality of antisepsis. I was lying in bed savoring the daylight when suddenly my door burst open and a huge bearded man erupted into the room.
Out of it, Jimmy! Out, I say! Oh, I beg your pardon. I didn't know there was company at the manor.
I arrived too late to make the gossip column.
I might have frightened the life out of you bursting in like that.
Well, you didn't. Why don't you sit down?
In this house? Never. I may on occasion breeze through it like a wholesome wind, but sit down in it? Never. The place has a wonderful accumulated medieval filth. You have a name, no doubt?
Gardner. Steve Gardner.
Should I know it? I mean, are you some sort of celebrity?
I decided not to be, so that I'd have less to lose when they drop the bomb.
I grow to love you, sir.
It happens everywhere I go.
Come, Gardner. Hurl yourself from that dingy, grey-sheeted, odoriferous, graveyard-blanketed, brick-pillowed insult to the name of hospitality, and we will take the air together.
If I meet anyone in the long, dark passage to the bathroom, who do I say drag me out of bed?
Say that Romilly Fostard is here.
I've heard of you.
Anyone who can read hairs. Ah, here comes our jolly host. A very good morning to you, Wilfred Morton.
Good morning.
You have all the bright, early quality of chewed grey wool.
I hope you are comfortable, Mr. Gardner.
Fine, thank you.
I'm afraid I didn't sleep at all well. I seldom do.
You always do. You sleep your dormouse way through, Rip Van Winkling from generation to generation in a shabby dream of nothingness.
Why do you come to this house if you despise us all so much?
I come bouncing in and out of this house in a disinfectant capacity.
You flatter yourself.
And in the vague but imperishable hope that your son might even yet be brought back from this living tomb.
Neither my son nor I are interested in your undergraduate therapy.
A fig for you and your preferences.
One day, Foster, you will drive me to kill you.
Come, Gardner. Hurry, man, hurry. The bird of time is on the wing. Soon the tavern doors will be opening, and the mingled scent of malt and new sawdust will be dizzying the Presbyterian air.
Inside the pub, it was cool and clean, and at that time in the morning, we had the place all to ourselves.
Good luck to you, and all who sail in you.
Cheers.
Ah, I love beer. I loathe whiskey. Whiskey always gives me the delusion that I am Attila the Hun.
I shouldn't think you need either. I imagine you can get drunk on words.
My daily consumption of beer is in the neighborhood of 3 gallons.
You're built for it. What I can't understand is this. Why does a famous character like you bury himself in a place like this?
Gardner, let us here and now abandon modesty to the old maids and the secretly modest. I am the biggest literary gun in the country. Therefore, I can shell at long range. I can sit here and pick off all the scribbling little mannequins and minikins, poetasers and versifiers that scurry beneath the smoke of the metropolis.
Is that the only reason?
Frankly, no. I wanted to write a study of a poet called Francis Lennox.
How about that?
You know his work?
I've heard some of it.
I came here originally to gather material for my Lennox study. I have stayed 5 fascinated years, trying to understand how such a magnificent blossom of poetry could have been nourished in this little dung heap of a Scottish village. 2 more pints, you hear?
Right away, Mr. Foster.
How good was Lennox, do you reckon?
The greatest in this century.
Can I get him in paperback?
Oh, yes, with a preface by Romilly Foster.
Too much too soon.
2 pints,
sir. This is mine.
I was the first to publish him, you know. I was running my magazine, Nose and Thumb, at the time. Lennox sent me some poems. Astonishing stuff from a boy of 16. Perfect. I wrote him an excited letter about them. He sent me some more. They were even better.
Did you ever meet him?
Oh, yes. 2 or 3 times in London.
What was he like?
He was the handsomest man I ever saw. Tall, golden, and masculine. None of this scruffy, what's the point of it all, I opt out kind of rubbish. He was a man. He was honest.
He had all the integrity in the world.
And the North Koreans murdered him in a prison camp?
No.
But I understood.
He was murdered in the prison camp, all right. But not, I have reason to believe, by the North Koreans.
I came out of the pub in a daze that had nothing at all to do with Huey McInnes's prime beer. It was, if you like, a triangular daze composed of three voices. First, there was Jimmy.
We went to the same school. We were in Korea together. We were in the same prison camp.
Then there was Jimmy's father.
I am a ghost. Jimmy has become one too.
And finally, there was the whispering voice that had spoken in my ear. The voice that Jimmy said was the voice of Francis Lennox.
You who are alive, who survive, whom the mathematics of luck wakes ten-fingered to count a private dawn's blessing, what can you know of the clay and the candle of darkness and the worm's molecular kiss?
Three voices. Two home and one away. Far away. Out of this world, literally. I didn't like the thoughts my brain was thinking, so I took them for a walk through the little town. In the center of the town, there was an odd little oasis, a patch of grass with benches grouped round the local war memorial. Inspector Gordon was seated on one of the benches, reading the names of the dead in World War I. The dead of World War II were noticed underneath, like a postscript to a letter. A morbid way to spend a lovely morning.
Ah, Mr. Gardner. And how is the wheeling and dealing?
At a standstill.
Oh, but I'm told that times are hard all over.
They're particularly hard down here.
Your friend Morton, I take it, is not being cooperative.
You could say that. I have a problem.
Only one?
It's a big one.
There are all kinds of problems now. Financial, marital.
This is a moral problem.
If you feel you must weep on a shoulder, then I willingly offer you mine. But mind, as a private individual, not as a policeman.
Suppose it concerned you as a policeman.
Ah, then you would have both my private and my official ear. Has the prospect frightened you away?
Can I tell this in my own way?
Oh, please do.
All right, here we go. I told you I was a wheeler and dealer.
You mentioned it.
Well, I came up here to persuade Jimmy Morton to come back to London. He turned me down flat.
Or maybe he's permanently tired of the rat race.
There's nothing wrong with a rat race. Only the quality of the rats.
But I interrupted you.
You didn't, really. You see, Jimmy enjoyed the rat race, and he wants to go back. So there must be a pretty hefty reason that keeps him here.
Logical.
Now, supposing I'd found out what that reason is.
Which you have done?
Which I have done.
Let's suppose some more.
No, I... Let's forget it.
If you remove that reason, then young Morton will go back to London and you would have achieved what you came up here for, right?
Brilliant.
This is where the problem becomes a moral one, isn't it?
Yes.
What exactly is involved?
Betraying Jimmy. Breaking a confidence.
And bringing the police into the business?
Yes.
People like you, Gardner, have a sort of fifth form morality.
People like me have no morality at all. We just have friends.
As I see it, you have no problem at all. What you do have is a duty as a responsible citizen.
I've heard all this before.
It'll be a repetition.
I'll think about it.
Think about this as well. At the least, you may be obstructing justice. At the worst, you may be making yourself an accessory to something very, very, very unpleasant.
I'll think about all that, too. I left him to resume his contemplation of the memorial's dead names. I could smell the smell of a boat beginning to burn, and it was one of my own. The afternoon was settling in now. Cats in shop doorways soaked up the sun like black blotting paper. A coal merchant was doing his rounds, and every so often a weird dark howl would come from his face. Tiny children were bouncing home from school, smelling of free milk. Plasticine. Then I saw a sign that said County Library, There, I thought, is the place to start the search for Frances Lennox. The girl at the library counter was fair-eyed and bespectacled, but her teeth were good.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm sure you can. I'm looking for a book.
Then you've come to the right place.
I wish I'd said that.
Did you have any particular book in mind?
Any book of poems by Frances Lennox.
Oh, yes, our local genius. We're all very proud of him here. His early death was a great loss to literature.
An irreparable loss.
We only have one book of his. That's to say, if it isn't out on loan at the moment, The Forgery of the Spirit.
Could you check if you have it, please?
Oh, of course. If it's there, I'll fetch it for you.
You're very kind.
Not at all. Won't be a moment. Well, sir, here it is.
Ah, good. Yes?
Do you have a library ticket?
A library ticket?
I'm afraid I can't let you have the book out without one.
I only want it for a very short time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My television producer's going to go spare about this.
Television?
My own fault, of course. I should have bought a copy of the poems up from London with me.
Are you going to do a television programme about Frances Lennox?
Yes, I'm up here doing a recce.
Filming?
That's right.
What, here? In the library?
Why not? We could.
And that's what you need the book for?
Yes.
If anything happens...
I'll say I walked out with it absentmindedly.
All right.
You're a doll.
Anything for our local genius.
You like his poems?
Well, actually, I've never read any of them.
I took my unofficial Crown Octavo library-bound prophet without honour out with me into the sunshine. The pavements were hot and the houses baked beneath the high mackerel sky. It was going to be a good day tomorrow, except for those who wouldn't ever see tomorrow. That cheerful reflection took me to the police station and the ironic Inspector Gordon.
Have you decided to tell me, or will you be burned at the stake?
I've decided to tell you.
Tell me, then.
Last night when I left here, I went to the Morton house and walked into a real gothic setup. Mouldering old house, mouldering old man.
Mouldering young man, too, they tell me.
Yes, and the weirdest maid you ever saw.
Her name is Delia Dewar. What's weird about her?
She runs the house.
Of course she does.
I don't mean in that way.
Then what way do you mean?
She cracks the whip and her masters jump through hoops.
Oh, go on.
Well, like I told you, I came here to excavate Jimmy Morton. So I put the proposition to him. He threw it out, got quite neurotic about it.
So?
So we decided to sleep on it.
Oh, you stayed in the house?
Jimmy insisted. He said I could have his room and he'd sleep in the spare. We talked for a while and then we broke it up. I went to bed and woke up in the middle of the night. Someone was whispering right in my ear.
Delia, perhaps?
It was a man's voice, whispering a poem, something about a candle of darkness.
A candle of darkness?
Yes.
Oh, I like that. And what happened then?
Well, the next thing, Jimmy was bursting into the room. He was near hysterical. I calmed him down, then he told me he'd been hearing this voice for 4 years.
Did he recognize the voice?
He said it was the voice of a dead man. I tried to use the situation to make Jimmy change his mind about London. I suggested the reason he stayed here was his father. I asked him, sarcastic-like, if he was afraid the kind man would grab his father.
Oh, and what did he say to that?
He said that that was the last thing he was afraid of.
Interesting. Very interesting.
I thought it was, too.
The inference being that his father was the kind man.
You make your inferences and I'll make mine.
It's a strange story.
Is that the official way of calling me a liar?
Oh, the official way is to check everything that can be checked. Ghostly voices hardly fall into that category.
But the other thing does.
The other thing does.
Well, where do we go from here?
Well, now, you being in the house...
No!
I was only going to suggest that...
I've said my piece once and for all. From now on, you're on your own.
You are a character, Gardner. You don't shirk the big betrayal, but you funk all the little ones that are part and parcel of it.
Look, there are the things I want to do and the things I have to do. I get just as confused between them as the next man.
You're just evading responsibility.
Maybe. If so, I'm evading it all the way. I'm not going to spy for you. From now on, you're on your own. I left the police station and went down to the sea wall and read some Frances Lennox. I have never been asked to adjudicate the Nobel Prizes for poetry, which is just as well for Frances Lennox. What his poetry did for me was precisely nothing. So I looked at the harbour. Two motorboats preened themselves in the still water, and on the harbour wall, an old man in a blue seaman's jersey was talking to a girl. The old man had a look of Cape Stiff and shipping them green on the starboard quarter, and Barks, jury-rigged, limping into port, with himself tied to the wheel. Actually, he was only local colour for the tourists, photogenic and phony. But the girl was something special. She was a good deed in a naughty world. And watching her, I forgot Francis Lennox. He was only a dead genius, and she was a live masterpiece. Then I got up to walk home, and I hadn't gone far before.
You left your book lying on the sea wall.
Thank you.
You've got lousy taste in literature.
You reckon?
I reckon.
A critic already.
So you're from London. Big deal.
Well, news certainly does get around fast here, doesn't it?
You're a new face. We don't see many of them.
Well, you don't look local.
I am.
I didn't say you weren't. I just said you didn't look it.
We're international nowadays, the young. Didn't anybody tell you?
What's your name?
Marshall. Lindy Marshall.
Gardner. Steve Gardner.
Hello.
Tell me about yourself, Lindy.
Then what? You'll make me a big star or something?
Oh, who's been kicking you around, doll?
Nobody kicks me around.
Is that what you want to be, a big star?
I want to be a writer.
You must be mad.
I know.
These Francis Lennox poems, what's wrong with them?
Well, they're not about anything or anybody. These poems are acting all the time, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, yes. You're absolutely right.
You don't dig them either?
I think they're a load of old rubbish.
A critic already?
Romilly Foster doesn't agree with us. You know Romilly Foster?
Yeah.
Well, that takes care of him, then.
He's a balloon. All that phony Dylan Thomas bit. Young lady, to be a writer is the privilege of privileges. And if the weight of my undoubted influence can push you one small inch towards Parnassus, let my shoulder be your guest.
Then?
Then he made a big swinging pass at me, so I clobbered him.
Come on, I'll buy you a coffee. We went to a dingy cafe run by a sad, limping little Italian who looked as though he had just received a get-well-soon card from the Mafia. And it turned out to be more than just coffee. The girl ate enough spaghetti to stuff a mattress. She ate like they were banning food tomorrow. And when she finished, she looked at me across the checkered tablecloth.
I'm a pig.
When did you last eat?
Who's counting?
I'll mind my own business. Cigarette?
I don't. What's your interest in Francis Lennox?
I'm not sure yet.
I mean, you don't look the literary type, you know.
I'm not.
I talk too much, especially on a full stomach. It's to hide it rumbling.
You know Jimmy Morton?
Oh, I know everybody in this town.
You like it?
Yes, I suppose so. He's very talented. But...
But?
I mean, he's sort of gone soft at the centre, if you see what I mean.
Yes. But I'm trying to get him to come back to London.
Huh? Good luck.
I don't know. There's a funny situation going on, and this Francis Lennox thing is part of it. I don't know.
Francis Lennox once worked for my father.
Really?
Hmm.
Do you think I could speak to your father?
He's dead.
Oh, Lindy, I'm sorry.
Alcohol poisoning. I'm telling you because you'll hear it anyway, this being a small town and everything. He was a building contractor. First he drank himself out of business, and then he drank himself to death. End of story.
Did you like him?
Yes. He was a good, weak man who just couldn't cope.
And your mother?
She ran off with some man to Canada. Somewhere romantic like that. To blame her.
How old are you?
18.
And what do you do?
Nothing special. Anything honest.
I mean at the moment.
I'm unemployed. And there's a lot of it about.
You live alone?
Sir?
Yes, I live alone. A dreary bedsitter with a gas ring.
How about friends?
None. The kids here bore me. I mean, the things I'm interested in that... Oh, I don't know how to say it without sounding like some... Anyway, the kids here bore me.
So you live alone and have no friends. I don't like that.
Why not? Oh, come on. You're not going on about that kind man jazz.
That's exactly what I am on about.
That's a load of old newspaper rubbish. Goose pimples for the mums and dads.
I'm not so sure.
You worry about everybody like this.
Only people I dig.
You'll get premature grey hair. Well, I've got to go now. Things to do, you know.
I'd like to keep in touch.
I drink a lot of coffee here. And if I'm not here, Marco takes phone messages for me.
I'll remember.
Thanks for the meal and everything. Ciao.
Ciao.
Oh, don't sit up nights worrying about me. I can take care of myself.
Ciao. She went off and suddenly there was a hole in the day. So I called for the bell and paid it. The sad, limping little Italian took the money and gave me change. And all the time he was worrying about that get-well-soon card from the Mafia. I went back to the shaggy, broken-nailed, draggle-tailed, non-mod con horror of a house where the Mortons existed. It was filled with quiet smells, like a family vault. Even to open the door made me feel like Burke and Hare. I stole quietly along to my room. There was already somebody in there, bent in a devotional attitude over my open traveling bag. A praying mantis, enthusiastically praying its way through my belongings. I watched for a moment from the doorway, and then I spoke. And just what did you hope to find in there, Delia?
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.